Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, December 7th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A senior at Manitgum High School in Sitka is suing the state of Alaska. Nelson Canuck is the lead plaintiff in a case about climate change. He and five other Alaska youth argue the state isn't doing its part to deal with the problem. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
The snow is coming later in Kipnuk. The river does not stay frozen all winter, and the riverbank is quickly eroding. Those are just a few of the changes Nelson Canuck says he sees in his western Alaska hometown.
My house back in Kipnuk, we live right in front of the riverbank.
Nelson says the permafrost that used to hold the bank in place is melting. He's watched the river move closer to the bright green house he shares with his parents and five siblings. He and his father, William, have taken measurements.
In the springtime, we lost about 8 feet. And not too far after that, in the summertime, we lost about 5 feet. And so now I'm not sure how much closer it has been because I've been here at school in Sitka.
Nelson is one of six Alaska youth being represented by the organization Our Children's Trust. The Oregon-based nonprofit filed lawsuits on behalf of young plaintiffs in 9 states. A separate suit is pending against the federal government, and there are a few international cases, too. The lawsuits ask their respective governments to consider the atmosphere a public trust and to exercise their duty to protect it. Eagle River attorney Brad DeNoble represents the Alaska plaintiffs, including Nelson.
Unfortunately, he is the perfect plaintiff.
DeNoble says he uses the word unfortunately because climate change could have serious effects on Nelson and his family.
Where Nelson lives in Kipnuk, the tundra and the ocean, as he has described, is basically their supermarket. From an actual gathering of food to a culture to a way of life, climate change is significantly and severely impacting that.
The original suit was filed in 2011, but dismissed earlier this year in Anchorage Superior Court. Judge Sen Tan essentially ruled climate policy is not an issue for the courts, but for the political process, the legislature, and the executive branch. In appeal papers filed with the Supreme Court in November, DeNoble says his clients did not ask the court to set a specific policy, but rather to tell the state it has a responsibility to do something. It wants Alaska to encourage a 6% annual reduction in carbon dioxide beginning next year. The Our Children's Trust lawsuit is against the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, but it was Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Larry Hartig who returned KCAW's phone call. He said he couldn't speak directly to the lawsuit, but that Alaska has taken steps to address climate change and continues to do so. He cites examples like rock walls that were put up to help communities facing erosion issues. And the state has helped develop disaster plans for places like Kivalina, a northwest Alaska coastal community battered by autumn storms 5 years ago. As for reducing emissions by 6% a year, as the Our Children's Trust group recommends, well, Hartig says making a dent that big would probably mean massive changes to oil and gas production, as well as air and marine travel. And much of that, like the kinds of fuel airliners can use, is out of the state's control. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions into the future is important, Hartig says. But even if that happens, what's already been done will continue to have consequences.
Again, if we all shut off our carbon emissions tomorrow, what's in the atmosphere is in the atmosphere now. And this is, again, I say if the scientists are right, and I'm not a climate scientist, if they're right, then that warming is going to continue. So it means that we have to adapt.
Back in Sitka, Nelson Canuck hopes adaptation does not mean his family will have to move from Kipnuk.
That is where my family grew up, and that is where my ancestors have lived. And we're coming into a new world where many cultures are constantly changing. But I believe it's important to keep our feet in our homeland and remember our roots and remember our traditional values.
For now, those things are on solid ground. Whether they stay that way will depend on the river. And what happens next will depend on the Alaska Supreme Court. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Nelson Canuck will show the film about Kipnuk and talk about the case he's trying to make against the state. His presentation is at 1 p.m. tomorrow at the Sheldon Jackson Museum. Admission is free. The certification of House District 34 race this week has put Jonathan Christ Tompkins in the legislature and ended the service of Bill Thomas, who along with Senator Albert Kukesh was one of two Alaska Native representatives in Southeast. But the election is also a turning point for another demographic, youth. Christ Tompkins is only 23 years old, but almost the youngest person ever elected to state government. KCAW's Robert Woolsey spoke recently with the person who holds that honor.
Terry Gardner was 22 when he was elected to represent Ketchikan in the legislature in 1972. Gardner had interned in both the Washington State Legislature and worked as an aide to Juneau Representative Mike Miller in Alaska. So he was already a familiar face in government when he won a seat in the Capitol, maybe a little too familiar, as he learned on the first day. He was standing in the doorway to the House, preparing to be sworn in.
And a senior legislator came along and was, been around many terms and was going into the chamber and assumed that I, this young person standing there, was one of the pages. And so she handed me this big pile of stuff and said, here, do X, Y, and Z, a typical task that pages would be asked to do. And so I just said, okay.
Gardner was not quite ready to burst this particular legislator's bubble. He finally did when a few minutes later she reminded him that pages were not permitted to sit in the legislator's chairs. After that initial misunderstanding, Gardner says his job was the same as any freshman legislator's, regardless of age.
I think it's a matter of just demonstrating that, you are serious, that you're willing to do your homework, that you're willing to listen to the senior members and learn from them, which you definitely need to do. That's how you learn. You can't learn it all by, reading the rule books. You do have to learn from the personal politics and get to know people, and that all takes time.
Gardner says he got in touch with Christ Tompkins through a mutual acquaintance late in the campaign and offered what advice he could. Gardner, maybe better than anyone, understands what Christ Tompkins is up against.
I was in the minority for my first term, so faced a similar situation that Jonathan will be a freshman, be young, and be in the minority. That's theoretically about as low on the totem as you can be.
Gardner received a committee chairmanship in his second term and eventually became speaker in 1978 at age 28. Pipeline politics, the permanent fund, and nonprofit hatcheries were all high-profile issues in his era. Gardner says he welcomed the input of lobbyists, at least those he trusted, whom he considered subject area experts. A lot of being in the legislature is sorting wheat from chaff because, Gardner says, the job never ends.
As a legislator, you don't have a huge staff, but you have an endless workload. You have all these constituents and groups and communities that need staff, and you need help.
Like Christ Tompkins, Gardner was just shy of graduating from college when he was elected. He was studying political science and history at Western Washington University and planned to use his experience running for the legislature as the basis of his senior thesis. Instead, he won, served 10 years, and then founded Silver Lining Seafoods. He doesn't miss that degree.
My time in the legislature, it was the best college education that one could ever hope for, because you are exposed to so many issues. You have to learn about so many issues. And there's all these experts there at your fingertips willing to give you information and opinions, and you hear both sides of an issue. No one could ever have a more educational time than to be a member of the legislature.
Gardner was about 22 years and 5 months old when he took office in January 1973. He holds the honor of Alaska's youngest legislator by just a couple of months over former representative and later state senator John Sackett, who took office in 1967 at the age of 22 years, 7 months. Sackett, however, was the youngest person ever elected president of the Tanana Chiefs Conference at age 21. Jonathan Christ Tompkins is a relative oldster. He'll be about 3 weeks shy of his 24th birthday when he takes office on January 15th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Sitka is about to get tougher on bears by getting tougher on residents who leave attractive garbage in their cans before the day of pickup. The assembly next Tuesday is expected to eliminate mandatory warnings and increased fines for people whose garbage brings bears into Sitka neighborhoods. For many residents, the bear problem is a new problem. Through the 1980s, town bears were virtually non-existent. ADF&G biologist Phil Mooney says the logging camp culture around Sitka had a different approach to animal control.
Quite a few bears got taken from the camps at that time. Some of those camps were pretty close and around Sitka, Stargavin Valley, Catlian. And if you talk to the old-time crews, they will tell you they didn't really tolerate a bear whatsoever.
Although some people worry about the growth of a garbage police, Sitka's real police chief, Sheldon Schmidt, says that isn't likely. He says the tighter garbage rules will help the department work with the very few people whose garbage is creating the problem.
How we're operating right now is reactive. If we're not out checking people's garbage, we're responding to calls when bears come into town and they're tipping over garbage, and that's when we are looking for enforcement.
Sheldon Schmidt and Phil Mooney are both on Sitka's Bear Task Force. So is Andrew Toms, the director of the Sitka Conservation Society. He thinks that Sitkans can adopt bear-resistant cans and new pickup strategies to make the community more bear-friendly, but safety remains the task force's top priority.
We'll never get to a point where there's no bears that are taken in defense of life and property, and there's no problem bears ever, because bears are so variable in their personalities and their behaviors that they'll always be the bad apples of the bunch.
You can hear the rest of the conversation about Sitka's bear problem on Soundcheck, a new program about issues, ideas, and people around Sitka. We're testing Soundcheck at 8:30 a.m. on Fridays. You can also listen online anytime at our website, kcaw.org, or download the podcast from the iTunes Store. And that's all for Raven News. And here's a look at your Sitka Zone weather. Today, mostly cloudy with isolated snow showers mixed with rain in the afternoon, highs around 38. Tonight, mostly cloudy with isolated rain and snow showers in the evening, lows around 30 with southwest wind 10 miles per hour. Saturday, a slight chance of rain and snow in the morning, and then rain and snow in the afternoon. You are listening to KCAW Sitka.